And now, the subject of today's portrait session is John Long, owner, publisher, and editorial director of Camp Magazine, a community paper for Kansas City's LGBT community and allies. Welcome, John.
Thank you very much.
So today is the start of Pride Weekend, or Gay Pride, as I understand you prefer to call it.
Yeah.
Can you explain why?
You know, I like the historical definition, and Gay Pride was started over 40 years ago. It was part of the gay liberation movement, and I like the fact that Gay Pride was never gay male pride. It was an all-encompassing word, and from the very beginning, it included all people. It was hippies and bisexuals and lesbians and gay men, and I think it's, in terms of branding, it's a great name. To me, pride, the word pride is kind of generic. It's used for everything from alumni reunions to patriotic rallies, and so I think I kind of miss not using the word gay pride, and I understand why people don't, because it's more politically correct to say pride and not feel like anyone's being left out. But I think from the very beginning, gay was always very inclusive, and I don't think it needed to be changed.
So I guess getting into that terminology question, so maybe we can put it aside for the rest of the mm-hmm. show, but there is the need, or I think that some people have had the need to specify particular terms. So we get LGBT, lesbian,
right.
gay,
right.
bisexual, transgender, or LGBTQIA.
Right. I mean, and times have changed. The word queer, which used to be a slur, is now used. Young people have embraced the word queer, and many people of other generations won't use it. They remember when it was used as a slur.
And so, you're a man who deals with words. You publish a magazine, so those words are important, and I wonder how you make those decisions about what words to use.
Well, we will call a festival whatever the organizers call it. So if they call it Pride, that's what we will call it. So it's not a matter of how I think. It's really a matter of what's journalistically correct. And I also have a great editor who is very much on top of everything we print. And if I didn't catch it, she would.
But personally, you see gay as being an inclusive word.
I do.
What's in your special Pride issue of Camp?
Well, we're covering basically the agenda for this weekend's festival. And then we're also talking about some other events, many events happening in Missouri throughout the month of June. Next weekend is going to be a new event called Big Gay Picnic at Penn Valley Park. The third weekend will be St. Joe Pride, and St. Joe Pride actually has a parade. This will be the third year for St. Joe to have their own Pride festival and parade, which is really, really fun. I encourage people to go out and watch the parade.
And is that something that we see parades and festivals kind of springing up in smaller cities and towns around the area?
Absolutely. In fact, in this issue of Camp, we have a listing of all the regional prides within driving distance, going as far as Chicago, down to Wichita. And we feature Joplin Pride, Springfield, Missouri Pride. And often prides in smaller cities are basically picnics. They don't have a lot of performers, a lot of entertainers, but it's a chance for people to come together. So,
and you started the magazine 11 years ago, mm-hmm. and as an outsider, it seems to me this decade has brought major strides for the gay community.
Amazing.
And that is what it seems to you. It sounds like
we began Camp at the June 2004 Gay Pride Festival, and because they're really was not a community newspaper. Magazines typically don't last very long when they're underfunded, or often people who don't know publishing get into it, and they don't know the economics, and so they fail. And so we basically wanted to start a magazine that was not there for the community. And we began as more of a newspaper format with three lead stories on the front page, jumping inside. And that was more of the background I had. And then we went to the single cover format, which proved to be more popular.
Why do you think that is?
Our distribution places told us that people said you look too serious before, and that intimidated some people. And so I like the serious part. I'm a newsy guy. But so we've been known for our covers, actually.
Huh, so you listened.
Yeah. Yes.
And I want to get more into the founding of Camp in a little mm-hmm. bit, but just in terms of the larger situation in the past 10 years, I mean, what kind of changes have you witnessed in Kansas City over that decade?
Well, Kansas City and the nation, but obviously the biggest one is same-sex marriage, which we will hopefully get an answer to this month with the Supreme Court decision. That's truly the biggest, but culturally, there have been so many changes. We have far less gay bars than we had 10 years ago. people mix more easily. You would not have seen heterosexual people and gay people mixing in a gay bar years ago like they do now. And I think that's because a new generation has grown up with gay-straight alliances in high schools, and there's much more acceptance. The gay bar situation was more protective. And we don't, thankfully, have the same problems with gay bashing and things that used to be a very serious problem.
But when you say that, I might think that some people might feel a loss, too.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people do, yeah. Well, there was a lot of community, and it was actually almost like a private club. And in that respect, it was kind of fun. And a lot of people say the more gay people are integrated into society, the more we become quote-unquote beige and lose some of that exclusive or individual identity, which is another reason for Pride festivals, because people like to celebrate diversity.
I know one of the things we've been talking about on this show over the past year is diversity within the LGBT community and mm-hmm. perhaps a lack of safe spaces. And I wonder if fewer gay bars means fewer safe spaces for certain parts of the community.
Yeah. In fact, one of the reasons we have a LGBT center here in Kansas City called the Like Me Lighthouse at 39th and Main was that Shelley Wright, the founder, who was the country western star who came out of the closet 5 years ago, she founded that. She's from Kansas. Hmm. And that's a safe space for youth, for everyone, especially people who don't want to go to a bar.
Now, what's the difference between covering the LGBT and allied communities for that community mm-hmm. versus for a general interest publication?
You know, one of the things I'm really proud about with CAMP is that I can walk into a coffee shop and see heterosexual people reading CAMP because they're just as interested in our lives as I'm interested in families in Overland Park's lives. Stories are stories. And I think that's what we like to focus on is we don't really cover a lot of national news. We stay focused on the local community. And it's amazing how we always find stories every month. There's never been a lack of who do we talk to, who do we write about. So I mean that's really what we do. And many of the stories we write are about allies, not necessarily gay people too.
What does that term mean, allies?
Allies means well, friend, of course. You know, there's an old saying, gay is a movement, not a market. And some people view, you know, the LGBT dollar. And I think the allies get it, is that they've been in this fight with us back when we were fighting and still are fighting against HIV/AIDS. And also everything from PFLAG, who are supporters, parents, friends of lesbians and gays, and they've been so great for the transgender community. It's often a coming out process for parents as well as the child. So allies have been very critical in that respect.
I wonder, you mentioned that this same-sex marriage ruling that's expected at the end of the month from the Supreme Court. From your perspective, what will this mean for Kansas City's LGBT community?
You know, it's huge. But, you know, many people in Kansas City have already gone to other states and gotten married. And PROMO, which is our statewide group fighting for marriage equality and fighting for LGBT rights, they've already recognized that the fight that they've been for several years for marriage equality may be coming to an end. And they have to focus now on other important issues like gender inequality. There is no protection in employment. So there's a bill in front of the Missouri House that Jolie Justice has tried to pass and when she was a state senator and others have championed, but it hasn't passed yet, which is called MONA, Missouri Non-Discrimination Act. Hopefully the next session that would be wonderful if we could get that passed.
It's a sense that that here in Kansas City, leaders are ready to move past that issue and, okay, we've won that and we can move on to other issues?
Yeah, I think, there's still other issues. I mean, issues of parenting. You know, it's not just same-sex marriage and everything from getting your driver's license changed for your married name and taxes. And there's still a lot of issues that are going to go with this.
So it's not completely over.
No, it's not.
And people here in Kansas City are still working on it.
And right now, we are planning a rally. The community's planning a rally, which is going to be down by City Hall by Ellis Davis Park, to celebrate if we get a good decision or to come out, even if it's not a good decision. We're hopeful it will be a good decision,
which will be that day.
Yeah, and we'll be announcing that. But we can't put a date on it yet. But. Mm-hmm. Through social media, we'll be telling everyone when the rally is going to be held.
Well, during the course of this hour, we're going to get back to Camp Magazine and some of the big issues in the community, but we want to get to know you, too.
Okay.
And I just wonder, what are you doing when you're not thinking about the big issues in the LGBT community?
Well, it's kind of funny when you have a job that's actually so integrated with your life. It's kind of good and bad.
Yeah.
Sometimes you want to step away, and I've often joked, maybe I'd like to go away for a week and not hear the words LGBT for just one week. I basically... I live with my three dogs, and they're all rescue dogs, but they're Scotties and a Westie. And I've been involved with other groups in town, and hobby has been bicycling. I haven't been great about it lately. But we also, my partner and I, who then founded camp, it was not just me, it was my partner, Jim Gable. We also formed a bike ride in 2001 called Pride Ride, and we ran that for about 5 years. And then we turned it over to AIDS Walk, and they renamed it, and has been very successful with it.
And it's so, but it sounds like you do a lot of living, breathing Camp Magazine.
Perhaps a little too much.
LGBT.
And I'm on Facebook way too much.
But you have a passion for it.
Yeah, I do. I do.
Can you tell me, you're not from Kansas City originally?
No, I'm from Chicago originally. And I left Chicago when I was 25 and moved to San Francisco with no job and then moved around the country a little bit.
Can you tell me about growing up in Chicago, what your family was like?
I grew up on the Southwest Side, and at that point, it was a very middle-class, probably lower middle-class neighborhood, very ethnic, Polish, Lithuanian, Italian were the primary nationalities in my neighborhood, and we were very aware of that. And it was very racially divided at that point. The neighborhood was not integrated, and that was a big issue at the time. Since then, it has become very integrated. It's become more of a Hispanic neighborhood, the particular house I grew up in. And
your family there still?
Well, we sold the house many years ago, and I have three siblings there. I'm one of six, and my mother is in assisted living in Chicago, which is the biggest problem of living in Kansas City, not being able to see my 94-year-old mother who has dementia. And so that's kind of a problem being that far away. But
yeah. And you went to school. You went to Catholic school, is that right?
Oh, yeah. I am, I'm one of six kids in an Irish Catholic family. So the precinct captain in our neighborhood loved six Democratic voters. But, and actually, you know, in Chicago, that was very important to work with your local precinct captain. And that's how you got the job. You know, I got my paper route jobs through the precinct captain and things like that. And when my mom was widowed, she turned to the precinct captain because that's how you got jobs in Chicago. It was very political. And then later on, I moved to the north side of Chicago when I was an adult.
And so you had a paper route as a kid.
I had two paper routes.
Huh. At
very
what
ambitious.
Age?
10 years old.
And was that an early interest in journalism?
You might say so. But I remember we had a really one of the big storms in Chicago, the historic snow. The paper boys had to walk a mile to get our newspapers because no trucks could deliver them to our house. And then we had to deliver them in the deep, deep snow. So I got a little award from the Chicago Tribune for that.
And what did that make you think about journalism?
You know, I was always an avid reader. So I read prolifically. So that was my start.
Central Standard is off to a break. We'll hear more from John Long in a few minutes. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, in for Gina Kaufman. We'll be back in a minute. Don't go away. And we're back. This is Central Standard. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, filling in for Gina Kaufman. Today, we're talking to John Long of Camp Magazine, a publication serving the LGBT community in the Kansas City area. You can join our discussion if you'd like. The number to call is 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Now, John Long, tell me a little bit about your family. You say that you had kind of a rough upbringing.
Well, it really was financially rough. My father was the breadwinner. My mother didn't work because there were six kids, and he worked overtime all the time. He installed telephones for a living and to, you know, make ends meet. So we often wouldn't see him come home at night till about 8:30 at night. And one day he went to work and dropped dead of a heart attack an hour after he went to work. And he was 45. So he left a widow with six kids under the age of 16.
Wow.
And my oldest sister was turning 16 the day after my dad died. So they had to cancel her party, and she had to go out and get a driver's license and become the primary driver at the age of 16, just so we could get to the funeral. So it was kind of tough on the older kids. And so all I kept hearing of was at the age of 10 that I have to be the man of the family. And that's kind of a tough thing for a 10-year-old to hear.
Is that why you took up those paper routes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, two of them to make more money. But and basically, I paid my way through high school and Catholic school, which, you know, was not really easy. After the paper routes, I worked at a grocery store and all that kind of thing. But you really didn't think about it. I mean, to be honest, it's no hardship. It's just so.
And what kind of interest did you have when you were in school?
I was kind of a loner, to be honest, and I was very tall, as I am now, as you can see. But there's nothing worse than to be tall and not like sports. And I was often called a waste. I'd hear that from people: "What a waste! What a waste! What a waste!" And you hear that, and you start believing it. And I was at a very dark point in my life as a junior in high school, and one of my Catholic brothers kind of rescued me and took me aside and said he knew something was going on.
When you say one of your Catholic brothers, is that one of the teachers of the school?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. In the Catholic Church, there's priests and brothers are more like nuns. They can't say Mass and hear confession, but they're ordained as, or not, I guess ordained is the right word. But they take some of the vows of the priests too. So,
what did he see in you? What was the connection?
It was funny. I still remember this. He saw that I was doodling all the time. My grades were suffering, and I was always doodling off the page, drawing cars. And I was obsessed with cars, and they were always going off the page, not to the page. Huh. And he just knew I was very distracted. He asked me to stay after school one day, and he just asked me just a few words. He just said, "Why are you so sad?" And it just all just spilled out. Just I sat there and started bawling like a baby of all the things that I'd been holding inside. And he said, "Well, let's go back to the monastery and talk." So we talked for about an hour. And then he said, and I told him how I didn't feel like there was any purpose since I didn't play sports and I was always being called a waste. And he said, "Well, what do you like?" And I told him I love reading, I love art. And he said, "Well, then I'll teach a course on art for you every Saturday." And he did. He said, "I'm an artist." And he kind of rescued this really lonely kid and gave me a sense of purpose. And everything changed from that point on.
And did this have something to do with your identity at that time? Or?
Oh, it did. Yeah. They didn't say the word gay back then. They just said weirdo and things like that, or worse. And I knew I was different. And between not playing sports and being different, I just felt like, as a lot of youth do, I'm not saying I'm unique. That's why there is so much suicide in high school kids. And thank God this brother rescued me. And I think that was a big part of it. Although I really didn't identify as gay until much later when I was in college.
And what path did he put you on in terms of, was it art? Was it
It actually
reading?
He was my English teacher. Mm. So he... Because of him, I actually wanted to become a brother like him, and I actually majored in English at the first college I went to. So, and I eventually transferred from that college and went into journalism. So there's not a lot of careers for English majors.
Yeah, so journalism seemed to be it.
Yeah.
And writing.
I actually tried radio and TV first, and then I realized I wasn't cut out for radio and TV. My professor told me I was too monotone.
Well, I don't think you're monotone. But I wonder, did your experience coming out eventually impact what you try to do now with Camp Magazine?
It has, because I think, when I was 25, after I graduated from college, I really came out. I went to the north side of Chicago and went to my first gay bar, and I couldn't believe that after work, you could walk into a gay bar and there was all full of men in suits. I didn't know that existed. I thought if you were gay, you only had a few occupations. And of course, I was young and on the north side of Chicago, and gay bars were plentiful, and I was single, so that was really fun. And then at the age of 25, it was killing me to be in the closet to my family, so I figured I was going to get caught if I didn't. And I didn't think coming out was an option. There were no gay TV shows. There was nothing telling anyone that gay is good. So I figured I had to move out of state I wouldn't get caught, so I could live my life. And I was going to move to New York or San Francisco for publishing. And I chose San Francisco instead. So, and I eventually did come out to my family when I was 30. So,
and was that experience what you expected?
It was really funny. I chose my youngest sister, who had a lot of gay friends. She was single, and we were sitting by Lake Michigan, and it was like an out of body experience. I literally felt like I was above ground looking down at me talking because I'd been, for the first time in my life, truthful. And I think when anyone lets something out of the closet, no matter what that closet might be, it is like an out-of-body experience. And the first thing she said to me is she was the only one who didn't think I was gay. Everyone else had come to that conclusion years ago, and I had been hiding it, and they already knew.
Was that liberating to feel like, okay, they they know?
Yeah, yeah. And the funny thing she said is one of the reasons they had figured it out was that, number one, I was living in San Francisco. Number two, I was single. Number three, I never talked about women. And number four, all of my male friends had multi-syllable names.
What did that mean?
Norman was Norman, not Norm. Christopher was Christopher, not Chris. Thomas was Thomas, not Tom.
Was that a fair tip-off?
That was one of their conclusions.
Interesting. Now, getting into journalism, I understand that you had kind of an unexpected foray into bartending and the restaurant industry.
Yeah, I had a great job right out of college on Michigan Avenue, assistant advertising manager at a trade magazine, which is, as anyone knows, trade magazines may sound boring, but they're actually really good training. But the magazine was for the floral industry, and it was called Florist Review. And I just couldn't stand it. And, I had this dream of going into consumer magazine publishing and not working for a trade magazine. So I quit after 3 months and took a job. I went to the Pump Room, which is a world-famous restaurant in Chicago. And I had always worked in restaurants in college. And so I got a job bartending. And that the Pump Room was the celebrity hangout in Chicago. So going back to the 20s, back when people took trains across LA to New York, and they would stop in Chicago. So I was lucky enough to get a bartending job there, and all the people there were mostly college graduates. They had all quit their jobs to do something more fun. And I was working with a lot of actors and models, and a lot of celebrities would come in, and it was a really exciting, great time in my life.
Sounds like it probably was a story a night, or 10 stories a night.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, some of the celebrity stories were pretty good.
Huh. And did you have people there who were also kind of interested in news and journalism?
At that job?
Yeah.
Well, one of the men behind the bar, back in the days of 35mm photography, always had his camera, his 35mm behind the bar. His name's Jim Anderson, and he has some of the best collections of black and white photographs of celebrities. He would stop tending bar just quickly enough to take their picture.
And would they let him? Or
yeah, in fact, the whole wall leading into the Pump Room was full of celebrity photos. Not his, but of over the years. So,
what did you learn about people there?
Well, it was a classy bar, number one. It was just elegant. And they had a dress code. You couldn't get in without a jacket if you were a man. Jeans were not allowed. So, for example, Bobby Short, the world-famous New York piano player and singer who was dating Gloria Vanderbilt, Anderson Cooper's mother, he came in wearing one of Gloria Vanderbilt's line of jeans, and they turned him away.
Really?
They kicked Bobby Short out of the Pump Room.
Mother-in-law's jeans, right?
And they kicked Bobby Short out of the Pump Room because he didn't have – he had jeans on. And but anyway, I learned a lot. I mean, it was a very classy cocktail crowd. You didn't do a lot of blender drinks. It was mostly Manhattan's, martinis, white wine. In fact, no one wanted to work the weekend because we called it blender night. That's when the people from the suburbs would come in, and all you would do, that blender would never stop.
Amateur night, right? do you still make a mean martini?
You know what? I'm okay with it. I got back into bartending last year to help out, make some extra money, and I realized it's not for me. It's changed so much. A friend of mine let me tent bar at Industry Video Bar, and yeah.
Now, you still always had in mind that you were trying to get back into journalism.
Right, right. And in fact, what was happening is that after working at the Pump Room for about 2.5 years, no one was taking me seriously. Every time I'd apply for a publishing job, I wouldn't get it recognized. So I knew I had to do something, and I started looking. I heard about the publishing course at University of Denver, and this is for people who want to get in publishing, but it's one step after college. And then they introduced me to the Stanford publishing course, which is mostly for professionals, not really for college grads. But they made a couple exceptions. And the course started in 1978. And so I took it in 79, the second year it was offered. And I was one of the only non-professionals attending the course. And to make the money to pay for the tuition and airfare and room and board, it was a 10-day program, I just told everyone at the pump room, I'll work your shift. I worked doubles and doubles and doubles for weeks to make the money. And so I took the course and then moved back to the pump room and decided, went back to my job and decided I was going to move to California regardless and look for a job. And then right before leaving, the director of the course called me and said she had a job as an assistant on the Stanford Publishing course in their publishing program, and I could apply for it. And she said, don't move here because I can't guarantee that you're going to get the job. But if you're interested, when you do move here, you can interview for it. So I did, and I got the job. Hmm. So
you were there sort of helping teach people essentially how to get into publishing.
I was doing logistics and actually one of the reasons my boss hired me is because I had been a bartender, because she liked the social part of it, because during the publishing course we did a lot of entertaining. All the speakers came in from New York and LA, and she liked someone who could just carry wine cases and pour wine and fix drinks and help them out and do as well as write obituaries in the alumni magazine. So
we're speaking with John Long, the publisher and owner of Camp Magazine, the magazine for the LGBT community here in Kansas City. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, in for Gina Kaufman. And we're getting to know how John Long got into publishing and got into journalism. I wonder what, over those 10 years you picked up then, did you have, on leaving that program, an idea, I'm going to start a magazine someday?
Not really. No. Like most people, I wanted a job with security. And money and all that kind of thing. And being an entrepreneur never really occurred to me. And then over the years, both in California and Washington, D.C., where I later lived, I'd been through a couple layoffs. And layoffs are, devastating because a company comes in and buys the company and everyone loses their jobs, or they downsize and you lose your job. And so after the last one in D.C., I started consulting. And that was the first time I actually went off on my own. And I did quite well. And then while I was consulting, I got offered a job here in Kansas City in Overland Park, and also one in Denver. And I decided to take the one in Overland Park and give up the consulting.
Why did you want to come here?
Well, yeah, it was interesting. Denver reminded me a little too much of why I left California, which was high real estate and a little too spread out, perhaps. And Kansas City reminded me a little bit more of the Midwest that I had grown up with. And also, I found it to be a very beautiful city, the city of fountains. And I was impressed.
What year did you move here?
I moved here in 96.
96. And what did you encounter in terms of the climate and the gay community here?
At that point, it was much more robust. Mm-hmm. We had many more gay bars. It actually reminded me more of San Francisco in the old days. And people would be surprised when I said that. And I said, well, San Francisco always felt like a village, not like a big city. And I kind of felt the same way about Kansas City.
You'd run into the same people, places.
Yeah, I liked that. Yeah, it was wonderful.
And how welcoming was that community then?
Oh, here in Kansas City, I thought it was terrific from the start. I didn't know where to go, where to hang out. I didn't know anybody here when I moved here. And one day I was going out after work in my coat and tie. And I asked one of the bartenders at this one bar where the business people went after work. And she said, I might want to go to Missy B's and try that. So I did. And I met a lot of my friends there and my former partner there, too.
Hmm. And was that the place?
At that time, it was. And there really were no business bars. That tended to be a bar where more people would go after work. That's all kind of changed now. We've become a little more segregated in some ways. We have one more professional bar in town, and then, I don't know, the bars are just a little, well, we're only down to 7 bars now, so from, I think, probably 14 a few years ago. So, I think, and a lot of people don't go out, too. That's the other thing.
I wonder about Kansas City in comparison to the other cities you've lived in, if there are more people within the gay community here who have come from rural parts of Kansas and Missouri.
Yeah, and that's been really fun for me to meet people. And, not having any kind of farm background and meeting so many people who did grow up on farms, I've really loved knowing that. And it's amazing what stereotypes you grow up with about people from rural communities. And it's been nice to change those stereotypes.
Well, Kansas City ends up being kind of a crossroads for rural and urban. And
it does, yeah.
And then it was, I guess, 8 years until you founded Camp Magazine.
Right. What happened then is the job I moved here for ended, and it was really not a good fit. And at that point, I decided no more corporate jobs. After what was 3 layoffs at this point, I decided no more. I wanted to work for myself. So there was a gay newspaper here in town that had folded called Midwest Times, and I had been a writer for that. And so after it folded, I decided, why not? Let's start one. And my partner was unemployed. He had been laid off from Payless Cashways. So he was a graphic designer, so he could do the design. I could do the other part, and that's how we started.
We have to take one last break, but we're talking here with John Long of Camp Magazine. You can call 816-235-2888 to tell us about your relationship with Camp Magazine. That's 815-2888. We'll be back in just a minute. And we're back. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Gina Kaufman is away. Our talk with John Long of Camp Magazine today is a portrait session, which means this in-depth conversation will be paired online with photographs of John taken by Paul Andrews. Check those out on our website later today. We're back here with John. You were talking about founding Camp Magazine in 2004, and there were some other publications?
There were. Typically, they were underfunded and they didn't last long. And there was one very expensive, glossy gay magazine called Verge. It was a lifestyle, gay lifestyle magazine is what they called it. The problem was he couldn't pay the bills, and he was trying to, you can't do this. And as being a publishing professional, I know the economics. You can't do this and give it away for free. And that's why all of the Kansas City lifestyle magazines we have are not gay lifestyle magazines. They're just basically good Kansas City magazines, and they're very expensive. They focus on fashion and home decor and landscape design, and good design is good design. There's not such a thing as gay design or gay fashion. And so it's anybody who tries to make a gay lifestyle magazine, it's a tough sell. And so he didn't last long.
There's a lot of overlap is what you're saying with general interest lifestyle magazine.
Sure. And so it's really hard to do something that specialized and make money. And he was struggling. And for that reason, with my publishing background, I chose to do a community newspaper magazine format because that's what I felt the community needed.
And why camp? I wonder if there are people in the community who maybe don't identify with the whole campy thing.
I know. Well, it was 2 reasons. Jim and I, the founders, my partner, we had the name Camp in our mind for something. Originally, we thought it may be a gay bar. And there are 2 gay bars in the country called Camp, one in St. Paul, Minnesota, and one in Rhode Island. And then we thought, no, we don't want to be bar owners. So long hours and all that kind of thing. So we chose it for the magazine. And we chose the definition, which is a community of people with similar ideals. So as you hear, the Hillary Clinton camp or the Barack Obama camp. And we felt that's what the magazine encompasses, whether you're gay or straight. We have similar ideals. And then, of course, playing up the campy word, too, the theatrical word.
And Kansas City, we're interested in your relationship with Camp Magazine. Feel free to call 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Now, I hear from even you talking about design, it seems like design is important to you.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, in putting together, you said at first it was more newsy, and then it kind of became more magazine-like.
Right. And in fact, with this issue, we have a new designer, Terry Newell, and he's already redesigned it from the previous issue. And from the very start, though, we still had more of a newspaper design, which affects basically how you put the magazine together in terms of less white space, more text on a page, less graphics. And we've kind of evolved a little bit more into doing more design now. So,
now your covers have been important.
They've been great. And we've had we've not really had an art director like magazines do, and yet we've relied on people in the community to be our art directors, like Andy Chambers, who owns Wonderland on Westport Road, and Chadwick Brooks, and then we've used late night theater people and some of the great photographers in town. One who we lost in December, Ann Brown, who teamed up with Andy Chambers, and she was a huge loss to our community. She did a lot of our covers.
Well, I'm looking right here at your iconic cover of Mayor Kay Barnes dressed as a 50s housewife holding a rainbow cake. And it was for Pride Weekend 2006. I wonder, how did that come about?
That came about through the brilliance of Andy Chambers and his photographer at that point, Dusty Cunningham, Dusty has since moved to L.A., and Dusty did a lot of our covers. They came up with the idea. And we asked Kay Barnes, and she consented. And at that point, we had an office in the Livestock Exchange building in the West Bottoms. And so they gave us an empty office to use for the photo shoot. And Mayor Barnes showed up in her pantsuit and her signature flower on her lapel, along with her security guards. And she had no idea she was going to be stylized like this for the photo shoot.
Really?
No.
You surprised her.
We surprised her.
You sprung this on her.
They had a clothes rack of different outfits for her to choose from, different aprons, lots of jewelry, and a wig. And her female security guard said, she's never going to wear that wig. And she did.
It's a blonde, curly kind of
wig.
Yes,
yes. She was a great sport about it.
She looks like she's having a ball.
She was terrific. And she, of course, the cake would have been too heavy. So I think Succotash made the cake. And then they photoshopped it onto her hand. And the cake has been a big winner. They've since been making it on the menu,
I've
I think.
Eaten that cake. Now, I just wonder what the impact was to have the mayor, pose for the cover of your magazine
huge.
In this way.
It was huge. I mean, I was on...
And she wasn't the mayor. I think she had just ended her term.
No, she was still mayor at that point.
Okay.
And some people had said, well, how courageous of her. And then others said, well, what does she have to lose? She's in her second term. And actually, it did hurt her in some ways, because when she ran for Congress against Sam Graves,
right,
up in a very conservative district, they were actually photographing that and putting on flyers on people's windshields at football games and mm-hmm. calling her Gay Barnes and the gay agenda and using this against her. So it was very courageous of Mayor Barnes.
Interesting. And now tell me about Obron McGee, who's a local actor and director, and the five-time cover club. Is that what you called it?
Well, we're thinking about doing that, just like Saturday Night Live does, with the hosts who have been
right.
on the most. And Ron would lead the way, because not only for late night theater has he been on our covers, but also The Unicorn and other productions. And he's such a chameleon, and he's so great in whatever role he does.
And tell me a little bit about late night theater. I'm not sure if it's around right now.
It is.
It is. Okay.
Yeah, it's back. They had, I think three or four different theaters around town. They did the old Chelsea downtown, and their last one was on Grand Street. And when they folded that, they went away for several years. And then they brought it back last year. Their first production was Golden Girls, a satire. Golden Girls Gone Wild. But Ron brought it back to Missy B's. That Missy B's built a whole divided room with a wall so that they could divide the bar up for theater. And Ron McGee has described it as bar theater, which loses a lot of the constraints of traditional theater.
And what do you think why do you think he's been on the cover and Late Night has been part of the cover for so many times?
I don't know. I just think it's they first of all, they provide great art, and it's always fun. And we've had a really good relationship with them. And late night theater has been so important to the Kansas City community, not just the LGBT community. And they do satirical shows. And there's rarely, if ever, one that people don't like. All their shows have been selling out.
Tell me, now, back to the news part. And I know you're mm-hmm. a news guy. What are some of the big stories you keep returning to here in Kansas City?
Well, we return to stories on covering youth. Brad Osborne, our writer, covers youth. He covers faith. But we've often covered youth whenever there's important things coming up. And I've actually heard from youth that they pick up camp at libraries. We have really good circulation at libraries. We have continually come back to the gay same-sex marriage issue and concern. And I would say probably politics, whatever's happening in Jeff City that we can cover.
And what is the significance, I think, of covering youth? And I mean, I wonder where kids are reaching the magazine, or are they finding it online, or are they finding it
in
coffee shops?
Well, Passages, our youth center, we have an LGBT youth center called Passages, the Like Me Lighthouse, the libraries. And I've heard some teachers have brought it to their gay straight alliances. They pick up copies around town and do that. We're really behind and working on it now on doing a digital edition, and that will be online soon, which will look identical to the print edition, and so I think we can reach more people in outlying areas that way.
And do you consider what you're doing with camp activist or advocacy journalism? I wonder what those words mean to you.
Probably more advocacy than activist. I mean, being a monthly, you can't really break stories all the time, we're reporting after the fact. We try and report before the fact if we can. We want to get the word out to everyone about everything from an equality rally to the Heartland Men's Chorus performing concerts and making sure that everyone knows. There's so many people who participate in this community, not just us. And our mission is to get the word out, you know, about everything.
And where are you distributing? Has that changed over the years?
It hasn't changed a whole lot. I mean, we've always relied. Unfortunately, we haven't had the budget for news box distribution around town. You know, I've often thought if I could get investors or a business plan and do that, I could grow the circulation and do all that. But on my own, it's been difficult to do that. So we've relied on free distribution in coffee shops, restaurants, bars, libraries, retail stores, things like that.
And tell me about your staff and your writers. I wonder how many are volunteers, how many are paid. I mean, mm-hmm. do you have a budget to pay a lot of writers?
Unfortunately,
and designers?
Not. And we've lost some good writers who have told us point blank that they need to be paid, and I understand that. And my philosophy has been I can't pay one writer without paying everyone. So all the writers have been volunteer, and we only pay two contractors, a graphic designer and an editor, who are both freelancers, and my delivery guy. That's a third contractor. And many of our writers have said they do this because they love it. It's their form of activism. As one writer told me years ago, he said, I could sit at a meeting for 2 hours on a Wednesday night at a boring meeting and join a group, or I could write for camp. And I'd prefer to sit in my living room, in my office, home office, and write stories for camp. Hmm. So,
and you do have partnerships with some organizations where they provide stories and content?
We have. Over the years, we've done special supplements. We've done supplements for Save Inc., our service organization in town. We're planning another one coming up this fall. AIDS Walk, we always do an AIDS Walk issue every year. We've done a supplement for the Heartland Men's Chorus. And we always would do a gay rodeo issue, which is always the Labor Day weekend. And this is the first year they've canceled. They've had to pull back this year, so we won't be doing that this September.
Oh, they've canceled the event.
They've canceled the event this year, which has happened in other cities. Other rodeos have had to do it through lack of funding, but they hope to bring it back in 2016.
Now, and every news organization from tiny to giant is seeing massive change right now with the advent of digital and social media. Mm-hmm. It really shapes what we actually read from day to day. And
sure.
I wonder how these changing reading and news consumption habits have influenced you at Camp Magazine.
Well, it has influenced. You know, first of all, we went to a smaller trim size. Right now, our trim size for the last couple of years has been a magazine, smaller trim size. We used to be a large tabloid format.
Right.
And we did this smaller trim size for just one issue, for the June 2011 Pride issue. And it was just going to be for that issue. And the response from our distribution places was so overwhelming, and from the readers, that they could read it being more compact. They could read it at a coffee shop, at a bar, anywhere. And it's just like how people are reading on their mobile devices. And so we, at that point, didn't go back to the tabloid size. We stayed the smaller trim size.
You're approaching the cell phone size.
Right.
It sounds like. No, you say about your distribution places. So does that mean that you talk to, is that the coffee shop bar owners, and just ask them who's reading it, who's picking it up?
Right. And actually, yeah, we do. And my distribution guy is great. He's been here with us for over 10 years. It's a thankless job running into places, because you have to count how many you bring in, how many are you returning. We keep records of all that. So,
and has it been harder or easier to get advertisers over the years?
It's been consistent, even with the economy hurting. You know, as we did when Barack Obama took hold and had to deal with so many issues, and there were so many layoffs and, you know, problems in the country. We've consistently held advertising, and I think it's because we are a unique market. Some people would call it a niche market. And so in that respect, I'd love more. And that's my one weakness. I'm not the best sales guy. So we should have more advertising than we do.
I wonder how the model compares, both on the journalism side and on the ad side, to what's called ethnic media or newspapers that are geared toward an ethnic community, like the African-American community,
right,
or the Latino community. Mm-hmm. Does it function in a similar way, or is it really very different?
No, I think there are very many similarities, you know, because our communities want to read something specifically for, whether it's ethnic or whether it's gender. I mean, they want to read something that speaks to them and speaks to their life. So,
Before we finish, I want to mention that the StoryCorps Out Loud project is coming to Kansas City in partnership with us here at KCUR and GLAMA, the Gay and Lesbian Archives at UMKC. And they'll be recording stories in the LGBT community here. I wonder what you think the importance of archiving and storytelling is for KC's community.
It's wonderful. I've so respected what Stuart Hines is doing with GLAMA. And he has worked with me, has gotten our back issues, and I would give him anything he needed.
He has a John Long collection.
I didn't know that.
I think so.
Oh, yeah. Wow. when we folded it, when we shut down our office and I moved my office back home, Stuart and Christopher Leitch came out by and we gave them a lot of things from the office for the GLAMA Museum.
Have you thought of the newspaper as being a history and an archive of the community?
Yeah, I really do. In fact, one thing I'd love to do, and I've talked to Stuart about, is giving him access to our photographs. You can only imagine how many photographs I have over 11 years that are deeply part of our history. I have digitally recorded interviews. I record all my interviews. And those would be treasures for a lot of people to hear.
Yeah. Well, tell me, it is Gay Pride weekend this weekend.
Sure.
What are you going to be doing?
I'll be down there taking photographs, talking to people. I'm not going to have a booth because I get more out of it walking around and meeting people. So I'll be there both days for that and seeing the mayor speak at 5 o'clock on Saturday. So,
well, look forward to seeing you down there. That's it for today's show. John Long, owner of Camp Magazine, it's been great talking to you this
morning. Thank you so much, Sylvia.
Photos of John by Paul Andrews will be online with this interview later today. You can find them at kcur.org/centralstandard. Sign up for our podcast while you're there, or you can find us on iTunes. Never miss a show again. On Monday, Gina Kaufman will be back and talking about breathing new life into old buildings like schools, churches, and warehouses. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and myself, with Fridays by Jen Chen. Our interns are Andrea Tudhope and Katie Knight, with help from Patrick Quick. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. Paul Andrews is our portrait session partner, and our music is by Spoon Bender Labs, right here in Kansas City. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. The Standard is set. Stick with us for Up to Date next.